Hey, how's it going? You're listening to episode 9 in season 4 of Something Shifted. If you're new here, there's plenty more for you to binge. Today's story belongs to Celeste.
I had preempted my life quick as soon as I was maybe 12 or 13, going, hey, I'm an only child. If both my parents die, I'm an orphan.
That's next. Something Shifted is about identity after interruption. It's where we tell stories about who we become after a life quake hits and what we tell ourselves when everything changes. And I think you're gonna like it here. My name is Sean, and this is Something Shifted. Right after this. If you're one of those people that believe rest is a luxury, we can't be friends. Real change is exhausting, and even when your mind is ready, your body has kept the score and it can't keep up without proper recovery. So I've started taking Solol's magnesium glycinate. It helps with muscle energy, nervous system support, and I'm honestly feeling a lot less fatigued. You can learn more about Solol and their full range of supplements for healthy aging on Solol, solal.co.za. I want you to picture a symbol for optimism. Go ahead, close your eyes for a second. Did you see a sunflower? Big, bright, turning its face towards the sun? For me, that's what I think of when I imagine unfailing positivity. And sunflowers are a big part of Celeste's story.
I only look forward with optimism.
During this episode, Celeste is our sunflower. Of Salek se, a sonneblom.
Ek is 'n Stellenbosch meisie. En sal seker altyd wees.
Celeste Anthony grew up in Stellenbosch in the 1990s. I know, that sounds like ages ago.
I come from a big family, dad's side, huge. I've got 18 cousins. I'm smack bang in the middle, number 9. And on my mom's side, I've got 6 cousins. But as a unit and ourselves, it's my mom, my dad, and me. That's all I've ever known. I'm an only child.
And Celeste had the best of both worlds growing up. The attention of both parents and the buzz of a big family.
I love being an only child. It's so much fun. I'm no lack of socialization because I've got big families on both sides.
In her family of 3, Celeste was the odd one out. Her parents are not loud people, but Celeste is.
You hear me coming down the hallway, you know?
It turned into a running joke with her mom, especially when Celeste chose a very public, very loud career in radio.
She always says, Celeste, you're adopted because you're not like, you know, you. When I stepped into this industry, she's like, you know, I don't talk and don't you ever call me from the radio and don't you ever put a camera in my face or whatever. She's like, please don't involve me in this.
Celeste cut her teeth in community radio in Stellenbosch. But even as she worked her way up toward commercial radio, she never let go of the other thing pulling at her.
When someone asked me what I do for a job, what I do for work, I say, don't confuse work with what my job is. My job is radio. But my work is what I was put on this earth to do, and that is people.
While she was broadcasting on Good Hope FM, she was also working her way through a social work degree at UNISA, one broadcast and one assignment at a time. Celeste, disciplined to work hard at a career while studying, comes from the example set by her parents. Her dad was a military man.
And so throughout my life, I call him Papi, I call him Colonel.
After his time in the military, Andrew Anthony became the CEO of Business Against Crime South Africa.
Well, I always joke, I go, my dad was a spy. You see all those movies? My dad was a spy.
Because Andrew worked away from home for many months at a time, Celeste's mom had to hold the fort on her own.
She was independent. She's really such a strong individual.
Two strong, determined, somewhat quiet parents raising a strong, determined, not afraid of the spotlight daughter.
I listen to people with stories of trauma, you know, parents, and I go, oh, I struck the lotto when it came to parents. It was like they were born to be parents. And it's funny because my dad, in the greater scheme of things, didn't actually want to be a dad. It was not in his plan. But when he stepped into the role, I cannot tell you one bad thing. He did it so naturally, so confidently. He just led by example.
Celeste's dad was also a cornerstone in the development of her faith. Is it fair to say she was a daddy's girl?
Since I was born, my mom said, "You're an Anthony, you're nothing like us." And I was very proud of that.
As much as Celeste enjoyed being an only child, she also had a quiet unease in the back of her mind.
I had preempted my life quick as soon as I was maybe 12 or 13, going, "Hey, I'm an only child. And at some point in this lifetime, I'm going to lose my parents. And it doesn't matter how old you are, if both my parents die, I'm an orphan."
But being the bright optimist she is, Celeste tried not to dwell on this thought for long, and instead soaked up the good times she had with her tight family unit of three. But life, as Celeste knew it would, had other plans.
My life quick is, I think the correct answer would be my dad's passing. 12 January 2025, but it's not that. The life quick happened in April 2021, when he was first diagnosed.
The first symptom was so insidious. Sore feet.
He just came home one day. He went, "My feet really..." He came home from work. He said, "Oh, my feet hurts. Like, they really hurt. They hurt all day." I went, "Is it the shoes?" He said, "No, it's not the shoes. I'm going to go lay down."
But the next day, he still didn't feel any better.
And the next day, he's like, "I don't think I'm going to go to work. I don't feel well." He keeps laying down. He's fatigued. He's tired. His body starts aching. And it's in the height of COVID.
April 2021 was a hell of a time in Cape Town, South Africa. We were in the throes of the second wave of COVID-19. The vaccine had only reached our shores in January that year, and hospitals were still overflowing with COVID patients. The death toll was still rising. In short, April 2021 was not a good time to get sick and need a diagnosis for anything that wasn't COVID. Eventually, Celeste's dad was admitted to the military hospital in Wynberg.
I think it was about 3 weeks in that we finally got a diagnosis, right? And they said this thing is called Sjögren's syndrome. And the reason why it was so hard to detect is there's basically only one other person in South Africa who has this diagnosis, who is Tien Stoffberg, a former Springbok. He's the only other person.
Sjögren's syndrome is a rare autoimmune disease where the body essentially turns on itself. It targets blood vessels, which causes inflammation that can quietly spread to the heart, the lungs, the nerves. It often hides behind asthma for years before anyone thinks to look deeper.
We both had asthma all our lives. And so he would have this horrible cough. And we had gone to so many doctors for the cough. We were like, "You definitely have TB at some point. His lungs are clear. He doesn't have TB." And so that already was the start of the Sjögren's syndrome.
For a long time, Celeste had prayed for a diagnosis. But when they eventually got one, it didn't make things any easier.
And then I go Google, right? And Google goes, "It's an autoimmune disease. There's no cure for it. They can manage it in certain ways to lessen your pain. It affects different people differently. The lifespan of the very few cases that we do have is 5 years." And then I go, "Oh, 5 years. You know? But still, you remain hopeful because we got a diagnosis and we will figure it out."
With the diagnosis came understanding, a treatment plan, and medication. So ultimately, a bit of hope. We can manage this. But somewhere in the background, the worst countdown had started. What followed was a slow unraveling marked by multiple hospital stays, changing medication regimes, and new symptoms.
But over the course of the 4 years, month by month, pieces of this man that I once knew existed is being stripped away from me. So the first thing is, you know, the pain in his feet, which was for, again, different people with the syndrome experience it differently, but for him, it was really in his feet. So we become now we are the drivers. And then every maybe 4 months, I track back and I check and I go, okay, you can't stand for too long, right? You can't walk properly. So now we have crutches.
But Colonel Andrew Anthony took it in his stride.
The optimism of my father is unmatched. Like, he would still cook and we'll put him a high chair in front of the stove and he'd still want to do that. He had still worked up until 2023.
And so, with a good dose of optimism and faith, the Anthonys kept on keeping on. The worst possible routines became their normal.
From 2021 until 2023, presented the same way. Like, you'd go into hospital once in a while and he'll come back and we'll figure it out. And he stripped away a little. I was almost optimistic that we would be the case that's maybe different, right? Because you're hopeful. And then 2024 came around. He goes back into hospital and it's different.
Celeste tried to anticipate things. Like a 12-year-old that anticipated being an orphan at some point, her Google searches of this rare syndrome meant she knew that organ failure might be on the cards.
And in February of 2024, they're like, okay, you're in kidney failure, okay? But you're still okay. And then we're like, okay, great. Because any positive word there is, you hang on to that.
As the presentation of the disease became more serious, another change started happening.
Suddenly, I'm advocating for him and I'm speaking on behalf of him, this man that I would ask everything, right? I didn't make any decision without consulting him because he was not an emotional decision maker. He was very practical with every decision. And now I am sitting in front of doctors and nurses having to do what I didn't know was what he was training me for my entire life for. Because my mom, she's soft and she's sweet. And she goes, you have to go with me because I don't know what to ask. And what I really want to say is I don't know what to ask either. My dad needs to ask this, right? But I'm sitting behind closed doors with doctors having conversations and asking questions I'd never thought I'd be able to say. I say, hey, how long do we have, right? And they say, okay, he's in kidney failure, but he doesn't have to go on dialysis just yet. And then you're hopeful. And then 2 months later, they're like, hey, we have to start dialysis.
The role reversal to advocate and decision maker was not easy.
I'd never, up until 2024, seen my father cry. He had gone to so many hospitals, and at the time he was at, I forget the hospital in Claremont, but he was at that hospital, and he cried on my shoulder. And that took me out, took me out after the fact, because in front of him, I would present as how he presented to me all my life, okay? I said, you have to eat. You're getting a lot of medication. I know you don't want to do this. It's only temporary, right? It's not only temporary. But to make him understand in that point, feeding him, celebrating for 3 spoons of yogurt,
yes,
right? All of these things had prepared me, because I don't want to see you like this. And I, more than I don't want to see you like this, I know you do not want to be this person.
And so 2024 was a blur of hospital stays and dialysis treatments. Because of the nature of this autoimmune disease, dialysis was not a simple treatment. It would ease the pressure on Andrew's kidneys, but then another issue would rear its head.
For the entire 2024, he would be in hospital 3 months at a time, 4 months at a time, then come home. And I tell you, the celebration we have every time he comes home was crazy. And then he'd be at home for 2 weeks. And when I say at home for 2 weeks, it wasn't even a good 2 weeks. Throughout 2024, we thought it was the end many times. And we had been prepared that it is the end many times.
Nonetheless, Celeste held on to hope.
I should also tell you that in 2024, at the latter part where things were really going bad, I said, God, please, please tell me everything is going to be okay, right? Show me in signs. Let's you and I decide on a symbol, and our symbol is going to be sunflowers.
In January of 2025, Celeste did a rare thing. She decided to take leave.
I never take vacation. I'm a freelancer. You know I don't get paid if I'm not there. But I go, okay, wait, I'm going to take holiday from the 13th of Jan, which is a Monday, to like the next Monday.
She was kicking off a holiday by attending a wedding on the West Coast and was making a weekend of it with her good friend Katua.
The Thursday before I leave the wedding, I'm in the mall and this woman, she's going down the escalator in front of me, and on the back of her shirt is a sunflower and it says, "It will be okay." And I go, "Oh, thank you. My father's not going to die. It's going to be okay, right?"
At the time, her dad was in hospital, which was nothing new to the Anthonys. Celeste's mom reassured her that it was okay to go and that her cousin was around to help with driving back and forth. So Celeste, Katua, and her husband Francois headed off to the wedding.
And the Sunday morning I wake up really early. I don't wake up early for anything. I'm a really late sleeper. And it's not a norm for me, but I put on my phone and I put on praise and worship music. And for the first time ever, I'm on the floor in this Airbnb screaming. A scream that I've never heard come out of me. And I've gotten no communication from my mom, so there's no reason for this reaction. And I'm singing, and I'm shouting, and I'm praising, and I'm on the floor. And I get up from the floor, and my phone rings. And I look, and it's my cousin who had moved in with my mom to assist in the driving. And I knew, and she said, "Celeste, the doctor's called, and they suggest that you guys come back. You come see your dad." I said, "Okay." And that moment, when I said, "Okay," my 15-year-old self and everything I had imagined about losing my dad and that I will not survive that.
Sitting in silence as they made their way from Langebaan to Groote-Schuur Hospital, Francois turned the radio on, and the first song that played was Josh Groban's "You Raise Me Up." This is the same song Celeste's dad had chosen to play at his mother's funeral, over and over again.
And I went, "Cut to him, my dad's dying today."
Celeste's family were waiting for her at the hospital. They tried to prepare her because by now her dad was hooked up to a lot of tubes and was semi-comatose.
I said, "Don't even worry." And I walked in, not a tear in my eye, braver than I've ever been before. Braver than I'd been the entire 24. And I came around that corner and like in my thickest voice, I said, "Colonel Papi." And I walked to his bedside, and I swear with the last energy he had, he tried to open his eyes for me. And the doctor came over to me, and he said, they've basically had given him adrenaline to keep him alive for me to get there. And he said, "But if his level goes down again, we won't do anything to assist."
The countdown was over. It was time to say goodbye.
And I stood by him, because though he was the bravest man I've ever known in my life, I think dying to anyone must be scary. And I do not want you to leave this earth with my crying in your ear. And I stood with him in his ear and I said, "You are the best man that I've ever known." And I said, "And this is why I'm single, because no one compares." And I said, "Thank you for everything." And I go, "Come visit me." And I said, "When you do visit me, don't give me a fright." And I said, "Come visit me in rainbows and butterflies and any way you wish. Just please communicate with me." And we stood there. And the machines are beeping. It's all in the background. It's beeping. And then I see the doctor come over. And he goes, "Your dad's busy leaving." And he made a slight sound. And he said, "That's your dad saying goodbye." And I kept talking and I kept saying, "I'm okay. I am fine. You have taught me literally everything that I ever need to know. I could not have asked for a better father." And we then called the rest of our family and we prayed, you know, and everyone was really sad, but I didn't cry. I don't even know what you're supposed... I don't know what you're supposed to do. I go in, I make a couple of calls, and then we must leave. What do you mean we must leave the hospital? And just leave him here, right? And, you know, when someone dies, they're Andrew Anthony until their last breath, and then they become the body.
Celeste and her mom had to move on with the mundane, yet practical tasks of planning a funeral.
I sat with my mother and I said, "Listen, we were luckily only two planning this funeral, but I don't want this to be a sad funeral because we are moving forward with hope." And that is exactly what our theme around the funeral was. We are moving forward with hope.
I want to share with you that Celeste and I recorded this conversation 8 months to the day of her father's passing. The room was filled with raw sadness, evident by the sniffs and tear streaks on both our faces. But there's also a bit of distance for Celeste, a little bit of time that had allowed for her to make sense of the first bit of life without her puppy.
Throughout the journey of planning the funeral and all of that, there was a little bit of gossips and stuff, I believe, whisperings, I shouldn't say gossips, of people think I'm not grieving, okay, and I'm not crying enough, and I'm not presenting in the way people assume and have seen before, because we only call it grief sometimes once the person has passed. But I feel like the true grieving is working through the process already. You know, they say there's these five stages of grief. That five stages of grief happened in 2024. I had bargained. I had said, "I will do this. I will quit my career. I will look after him full time. I will do whatever it requires me to do. If you push him through on the other side, I promise you." The denial, like, my dad is this man of God who has led so many other people to God. How dare you choose him? Right? And why, even if you choose him, why this suffering? That had all happened prior to the death of my father, the five stages, because it was preemptive grief. The final, I think, stage of grief is acceptance. To me, that was him closing his eyes on the 12th of January. Immediate acceptance.
Immediate acceptance might sound too easy, but the five-year journey with her dad's illness had taught Celeste to stand her ground, like Andrew Anthony's daughter would.
Open your arms up to grief and accept it, because being resistant to it will take you down a rabbit hole that you don't want to be in. You gotta work through the paces. You can't be resistant to grief.
And although she could accept her dad's passing, Celeste still had a lot of reckoning to do with herself. And all the versions of Celeste she had been and lost and gained in the 5 years leading up to this moment.
And so my life has been before my dad's diagnosis and after, right? I think my general disposition is happiness, cheerful. And outwardly it betrayed that. But I didn't show up as the friend I needed to. I didn't show up as the girlfriend I needed to be. I didn't show up as the daughter that I needed to be. I dressed for having clothes on my body. I didn't put on makeup. I didn't do anything. I was in total survival mode. And then for the people that got to know me, that I had met in the time of my dad's sickness. But I hope you understand that you met the worst version of me. Right? And there's so much more to me than you never got to experience.
Her journey back to herself is slow going.
And now after my father's death, what I thought first was I get to go back to 5 years ago, Celeste. I get to read books again. I hadn't read a book in 5 years. I get to do all these things that I used to love. And then I very quickly realized, oh, that version of me no longer exists. And she will never exist. And now I'm someone without their father. They call it the Dead Dad's Club that I'm now a part of. And I started rebuilding my new self. I'm discovering new things about myself. I keep saying, oh, I'm defrosting, I'm defrosting. Defrosting is one word. Because it's a slow journey, but it's happening. I didn't think of this word before. But it's a little guilt. That, let me tell you right now, my dad would be like, don't be stupid. But it truly is, because since my father's passing and so much amazing things have happened to me over the last 8 months, that I almost feel guilty in celebrating them. Not for anything, because I know he'd be chuffed with me, but I feel guilty for being happy for something when he's not around, right? So guilt definitely is a word that comes to mind. Defrosting. Guilt.
When she was a child, Celeste feared losing her parents. Through the process of losing her dad, Celeste has been given the unexpected gift of seeing her mother in a new light.
And I've come to learn so much about her, which I thought I'd known her, but in this last 5 years, I had seen a whole different side to her. But I realized, you are brave, but you are silently brave. And I overlooked that.
So Celeste might need to navigate life without her dad, but she's not doing it alone. She has her mom, she has her large extended family, and she has her faith.
Having my father was my greatest blessing. And my second greatest blessing is losing my father. But it took my father dying for me to see God in my face for the first time. How embarrassing. How embarrassing that this is all that this man has taught me. And it took his death for me to go, oh God, I understand. Oh God, I am not angry. What a beautiful life he's had. And I will endure a lifetime of missing my father for the privilege of having loved him, right? And that's okay. It's really okay.
Wow, thank you. Would you like another one of those? I have more in the drawer.
That's nice. I've got no more makeup.
We dab our faces again, and I marvel at this experience of profound shared sadness, and yet shared laughter, because our grief doesn't become smaller with time. It's just that we keep expanding and growing around it.
I feel my dad around me constantly. It's so weird. I don't feel any further from him. I must tell you that I also later came to realize, because after the fact, so many puzzle pieces come together now. I go, me asking you for sunflowers to let me know that everything will be okay was you saying everything will be okay, but not in the way I intended, because I had thought it would mean your dad will be okay. But what it meant was he will die, but you will be okay. And no truer words were spoken, because has ever been spoken, because I am my father's daughter. I really am.
These days, you'll hear Celeste's warm smile coming through the radio every weekday afternoon. And if you were to ask her about her plans for the future, she might tell you about the adventures she wants to take, the master's in social work she hopes to complete, and the sunflowers she can't wait to see. A free way to support our show is by leaving it a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It's a chance to tell us what you love about the podcast, and it helps others discover it too. Subscribe so you never miss a human-centered story, and check out the show notes for the Something Shifted soundtrack playlist, a compilation of songs we've listened to while making this season. Songs that make us feel a little less lonely and a lot more empowered. Many thanks to Rue, my executive producer, for additional writing on this episode. And as always, thank you for listening. Bye.